Well, greetings to everyone. This is what the Estonians call a great Sabbath. It is a Sabbath day because it is the weekly Sabbath, and it is concurrent with an annual Sabbath or a holy day. And so when the holy day comes on the weekly Sabbath, they call it a great Sabbath. We can call it a double Sabbath if we want to. I think we've used that terminology before. But it is a great Sabbath. Greetings to everyone. Welcome to services as we come to celebrate this very meaningful holy day to begin the annual plan of God. We also had Mr. Rigord said 23 people in Buffalo. Was that correct? And I guess you beat us by one. At Ron and Lori's house, Hazel says we had 22 people. We had 23? Oh, it was a tie. That somehow seems to fit with sincerity and truth. Okay, well. So we had the same number at both places. I'm sure in both places it was a team effort. And Mr. Rigord made some mention of things being team efforts in his sermonette. And we're here today as a result of a team effort. Last night, night to be much observed, was a team effort at Lori's house, and as I'm sure it was in Buffalo as well. And a lot of cooking done by the ladies. People were setting up the chairs and tables and getting everything prepared and just doing all of the things. And as Mr. Rigord mentioned, there is an attitude. He was talking about the attitude that David exemplified. Well, there was an attitude that I think was very prevalent. I'd like to make one special accolade. I could talk about everybody, but it seemed like last night at Ron and Lori's house, the decorations were particularly nice. And everybody knows Linda set up the decorations there. Everybody was there and knows that Linda set up the decorations. But they were very nice. And I might mention here today as well the flowers that we have. They're very nice. And Marilyn, I think Marilyn Kelly was responsible to provide the flowers for us. So thank you very much. If you're not happy with this facility, blame Hazel. And if you like it, you can give me the credit. Somehow that doesn't seem to fit in with sincerity and truth, does it? Well, we're here because Hazel went to the Moose Club or contacted the Moose Club, and the Moose Club told us we were not going to be able to use the Moose Club because Good Friday plus next weekend was a Saturday. And it's Friday. Today is a Sabbath, and next week's a Friday. But anyway, they had other things planned there, so we couldn't have it. But I'm not a person that has a great deal of visual aptitude, but some things about this place I really like. I really like what people call Tiger Wood, the bar over here, and the and the wood that's there, and it's very nice, and I enjoy that very much. If you're a nature lover, and we're here, and you prefer to see a moose head, you will not see it here. Of course, in the Moose Club, you would see the moose head. But I hope everybody's happy with the facility, and I hope you all found it easily enough. The special music was something that I wanted to have played here because I was planning to give a sermon entitled Ebenezer. There is a line in that piece of special music, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing is the title of it. And that line says, here I place mine Ebenezer. Here I place mine Ebenezer. And so I had listened to that hymn over the years, and I just wondered what the reference was to Ebenezer. And so I started to finally take a little bit of inspiration to look at that and to see if I could determine what it was that in this hymn, I regarded this hymn as being very profound and very heartfelt and reflected a lot of the things that we believe and understand. And so I was wondering, what is Ebenezer? I guess I had some sort of a vague recollection of Ebenezer in the Bible, but I didn't really have a good concept of what that meant or why it was such an important part of this hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. I had listened to the hymn mostly from a country and gospel musician by the name of Buddy Green. Now, I was sent an email message about the Lone Ranger. Now, some of you remember the Lone Ranger. Others of you probably will not. The Lone Ranger was my favorite cowboy growing up in the 50s, listening to it on the radio before television. We didn't have a television, and I don't think he was on television for a few more years after that. But always in the background of listening to the Lone Ranger was the William Tell Overture. And so listen to that William Tell Overture over and over and over. And you knew every musical line of that by the time you had listened to the Lone Ranger for 4 or 5 years, I'll tell you that. And so Dean sent this email with a link. Connecting to the link was this musician, Buddy Green, and he was playing the Lone Ranger on a harmonica. You know, the William Tell Overture, from which was a part of the Lone Ranger. He was playing it on a harmonica. It is the most astounding thing I have ever seen. He played it in Carnegie Hall. It was a Carnegie Hall presentation, but I can scarcely believe that it could be done. But if you have a chance to look at that, you might. But anyway, Buddy Green was sort of the impetus for me as far as this Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Now, he performed it. He performs it solo, and it's quite different than you see here that we played for special music with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. But I thought for a holy day it was a little more appropriate to have a full orchestration and so forth. And so that's the reason it was played that way. But I'm intrigued by this line. Here I place mine Ebenezer, hither by thy help I've come. So I wanted to try and unwind this meaning of Ebenezer. And as I did, it seemed to me that it was relating very much to the days of unleavened bread and had a particular meaning. So what I want to do is to examine the meaning of Ebenezer in relationship to the days of unleavened bread. Ebenezer is from the days of Samuel and Israel. Mr. Rigord talked about David, and of course Samuel preceded David by some time. Actually, Samuel finally anoints David to be the king while Saul is still the king. By that time, though, Samuel is an old man. Samuel is an old man. Ebenezer is spoken of three times in the Bible. The word is used three times. Searching the Bible with my computer, I find that the word Ebenezer is used three times. Zipping, as Mr. Rigord said, zipping, we'll be zipping back and forth here, looking at when this word Ebenezer appeared and the other places where it relates. 1 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 11. This is the last time that the word Ebenezer appears in the Bible. It is actually the time that Ebenezer came into existence. The two previous times, it's referred to as the place where the Ebenezer was going to ultimately be placed. But it was, as we read the context, you will find the Ebenezer was not there yet. Here in 1 Samuel chapter 7, verses 11 and 12, was a victorious occasion for the Israelites against the Philistines. Now, how and why it was victorious and what led up to that victory has a lot to do with the meaning of the Ebenezer. Verse 11 of 1 Samuel chapter 7. The men of Israel went out from Mizpah, pursued the Philistines, and smote them until they came to Bethkar. So, military victory against the Philistines. Verse 12. Then Samuel took a stone. The stone wasn't there until he did this. It's referred to previously, but it was the book was written later, and so it's referring back, zipping back and forth. Samuel took a stone, set it between Mizpah and Shen. I don't know what these places mean, but probably if you studied the places, you could find some relevant meanings as well. And set it between Mizpah and Shen, and called the name of it Ebenezer. So he set up this stone following a victory against the Philistines, and he named the stone. It was an important thing that he put there, and he named it. The name of it, also important. Hitherto has the Lord helped us. So that's the meaning of the word Ebenezer. At this point, or hitherto, or in this time, has the Lord helped us? Verse 13. So the Philistines were subdued. They came no more into the coast of Israel, and the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. Let's go back and look at the first place now, zipping back. Look back at the first place where Ebenezer appears here in the Bible. 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 1. The word of Samuel came to all Israel. Israel went out against the Philistines. Now, when it says, the word of Samuel came to all of Israel. Essentially what it's saying there is Samuel had become well known in Israel. The story of Samuel leading up to this time, it's a very interesting story. How his mother had prayed, Hannah had prayed, and Samuel was conceived, and Samuel was dedicated to the service of the Lord at the temple under Eli the priest. And God started to appear and to speak, give Samuel visions, and Samuel was speaking these visions, and he was becoming well known. So that's what's being referred to here.
The word of Samuel came, that is the fame of Samuel or the notoriety of Samuel, came to all of Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer. Well, Ebenezer wasn't there yet. You see, Samuel erected it there and named it in chapter 7. So it was where ultimately Samuel was going to place it. But it was not there yet. Interesting to note that it wasn't there. Especially as we'll see symbolism in this Ebenezer, which refers to us on down the road. All Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. A-P-H-E-K. That's the best I can do. So, this place is, Aphek. The Philistines put themselves in array against Israel. When they joined the battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army in the field 4,000 men. Bad day. They had a very bad outcome here. Now, it's at the same location. Remember that the Ebenezer is going to be set up, but it hadn't been set up yet. When the people came to the camp, the elders of Israel says, "Why has the Lord smitten us today?" They understood something spiritual is going on here. What's the problem? Why have we been smitten here by these Philistines on this day? Let us fetch the... What the problem is, I guess they concluded, they had not brought the ark down to battle. So they said, what we didn't do is we didn't bring the ark. And they sent for the ark and brought it down. Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it comes among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies. It may save us out of the hand of our enemies. Verse 10, after they brought it down, there was a great shout in the camp of Israel, and they were all now excited that they were going to finally be able, they would be able to defeat the Philistines. And this is the second time here that Ebenezer is mentioned. The Philistines fought, Israel was smitten, and they fled every man to his tent. Ark didn't change the outcome. Having the Ark of the Covenant there did not make the big difference that they thought it was going to make, that they anticipated that it would make. It was a great slaughter. 4,000 the day, the battle before that, which would have been within a few days, I suppose. There fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. Mr. Rigord's talking about at the time they left Egypt, there were 600,000 marching men. And so here, they had this, the army and 30,000 men killed in this battle with the Philistines. And something else that was really a bad outcome, the Philistines took the Ark of the Covenant. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. This happened at Ebenezer. 1 Samuel chapter 5 and verse 1. The Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. So that's the second mention. Still wasn't there yet, but this marked the place where it happened. Samuel, if he wrote the book, is very specifically saying, This happened at the place where the Ebenezer was ultimately erected. But it wasn't there yet. It wasn't there yet. And I think it's important to notice that it wasn't there. What happened in, you know, as we see ultimately in chapter 7, we read the first couple of verses, we saw there that the Israelites finally prevailed. Now, what you don't, you have to read the context, you have to read the chapters here to get the context. 20 years had gone by. And then they came back here, and they had a different outcome. Chapter 7 and verse 8, the children of Israel said to Samuel, "Cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us, that he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines." Samuel took a suckling lamb, offered it for a burnt offering, wholly unto the Lord. Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. So he had two bad outcomes. Guess what was missing? No. Wasn't the ark. They brought the ark back. That didn't improve the situation. Even a worse outcome when they came. But they had not come to God with their request. They had not come to God with their request. Samuel took a suckling lamb. Interesting there too, isn't it? In relationship to the Passover and the Lamb of God. And offered it for a burnt offering, holy unto the Lord. And Samuel cried to the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. As Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines attacked them. Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. But the Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomforted them, and they were smitten before Israel. This great thunder that God sent down on them caused them to fear. And here's a different outcome entirely. Now, the first two outcomes, the Israelites weren't a match for the Philistines. But here, after repenting, sacrificing, and praying to the Lord, God intervened on their behalf, and they got an entirely different result. The men of Israel went out of Mizpah, pursued the Philistines, and smote them until they came to Bethkar. Then Samuel set up a stone, took a stone, and set it between Mizpah and Shen, and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, "Hitherto has the Lord helped us." The Philistines were subdued, and they came no more to the coast of Israel, and the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. Very different outcomes. The difference in the outcomes has to be considered here. Ebenezer, or God has helped us. This stone, which represented the Lord helping us. So we can think about that in our own lives. And I think what you see in this hymn, special music presentation, is you see that the singers are saying, "Here I place mine Ebenezer." They are saying, "I am depending on the help of God based on my repentance." And that's what we celebrated when we keep the Passover. That's the difference in the outcomes. Difference in the outcomes, when you get down to it, is the stone of help, isn't it? It is the stone of help. Because without that stone of help, the real true stone of help, we're going nowhere. That's the bottom line truth. Without the stone of help, which we come before God the Father and Jesus Christ on the Passover day, and we acknowledge that we need that stone of help. That was the difference in outcomes for them, and it's the difference in outcomes for you and me. We have a commission for 7 days. The next 7 days, beginning today, starting last night, and last night, of course, the Passover was over, night to be much observed, and whenever sundown came last night, that represented the time when Christ's sacrifice had been completed. Up until that point, you know, we were suffering the apostles would have been suffering a difficult day, seeing that Christ had been taken and crucified. And yet we understand when he was put to death and completed that sacrifice, was put in the grave, that there was a whole new future for us, and we're relatively insignificant compared to the whole, but not just for us, for all of mankind, because the sacrifice had been paid then. It is at that point a celebration of victory. That is because Christ has completed his sacrifice, and that we are therefore observing that occasion as a result. 7 days, then, we begin to eat unleavened bread. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7 and 8. Purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened. Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Let us keep the feast. I pointed this out in Buffalo last week, I think, that we are to keep the feast. It's being written to the church in Corinth, which was a Gentile church, 25 plus years after the death of Christ. 55 AD, maybe 24, 25 years following the death of Christ, following the ministerial conference of Acts 15, where they decided what they needed to teach to the Gentiles, Paul is teaching to the church in Corinth how it is they are to keep the days of unleavened bread. Important point to be made from chronology. Let us keep the feast, Paul says, not with old leaven. Can't be in any doubt he's talking about the feast of unleavened bread, is he? Is there? Neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So how does the Ebenezer relate to this? Let's look at the scriptures, and back in Exodus chapter 12 and verse 15, 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eats leaven from the first day to the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. The first day there's a holy convocation. We're here with the holy convocation on the first day of unleavened bread, following the Passover day. No manner of work, save that which every man must eat. So on the holy days, you can prepare food in a way that you wouldn't on a weekly Sabbath. That only may be done. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for in this selfsame day, Mr. Rigord pointed out, I have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever. Personally, I look at this as if we look at Ebenezer, the stone of help, this point at which Israel, it was a turning point. It also represented a turning point and a defining line. They were disobeying God up until the time and point in place where this stone was erected. And then they sought God, and God became their help. So it was a turning point, a defining line. If I look at this as being a defining line for me, these scriptures about 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7 and 8, I have to say a defining line for me is that I feel I must spend 7 days developing sincerity and truth. If the unleavened bread represents sincerity and truth, I am to, for 7 days, develop sincerity and truth. I think everybody kind of really conceives or feels that is the meaning of the whole time, that we are to develop, be developing sincerity and truth in our own lives. So, if it is okay, this is sort of the extrapolation I would make on that. If it is okay to spend days when I do not develop sincerity and truth in my life, during these next 7 days, Mr. Rigord was saying, we should be developing sincerity and truth, eating a little bit of leaven, and being reminded, is it okay for me to have days during these next 7 days when I do not develop sincerity and truth in my life? And I don't think it is. I think everybody pretty much would agree to that. So if this is our reminder to be developing sincerity and truth in our lives, the physical unleavened bread, aren't we then also to eat that? Leading up to today, I made some substantial reference to this as we came to the days of unleavened bread. Leading up to today, there's a chronology involved. We can sometimes, as I have, misunderstood that the days of unleavened bread are the time we purge out the old leaven. But no, if you look at the instructions, by the time we come to the days of unleavened bread, all the physical leaven is to be put out. Doesn't that imply to us that in our spiritual lives we should also have put out the spiritual leaven before we come to this time, before we come to the night to be much observed? You know, I was given a bag of leaven, and I was told to take it and get rid of it. Several places were suggested to me, and I, as I told some of the people, I think last week, I have made a mistake or two in the past in trying to dispose of it at a place where I should not have. So I said, well, I'm going to go up to the gas station and buy gas because I got to drive tomorrow, and they have a disposal there. I think they'll be happy if I dispose it. dispose of it in that place. So that's what I did. But by sundown yesterday, the leaven was to be out of our homes. If we're looking at that as an instruction about how we are to be prepared, really, it isn't all about yeast and those physical things. It's really about our spiritual condition, isn't it? But by analogy, we should see that since God has given us this instruction to get the physical leaven out, we should understand that by the time we came to sundown last night, we should be prepared to then, in our personal spirits, be prepared then for 7 days to eat unleavened bread. That's the commission that we have been given for the next 7 days. Now, this Ebenezer, this rock, begin to think about it, and you see that there is a relationship between the fact that Samuel erected this rock and called it the stone of help. Ebenezer, that's what the word means, the stone of help, and the fact that we have our own living stone of help, don't we? That stone of help is Jesus Christ. Peter wrote, 1 Peter 2, verse 3. If it be so, it is so, isn't it? That you have tasted the Lord is gracious, to whom coming, that is to whom you come, if you found that he'd be to be gracious, and you come to him, to whom coming, that's what it means, as to a living stone. You see, the Israelites had this dead stone that Samuel erected. But here, Peter changes that symbolism a bit, and he says, you're coming not to a dead stone, but to a living stone. Who is that living stone? Disallowed of men, but chosen of God and precious. We come to that stone, and like Israel, if we come with a repentant heart, then we get the help that we need. Verse 6. Wherefore it is also contained in the Scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he that believes on him shall not be confounded. He is a stone of help, as he was to the Israelites in those days in physical confrontation with the Philistines. Unto you, therefore, which believe, he is precious. But unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner. A stone of stumbling, a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word. A lot of people stumble at the word, don't they? A lot of people who claim to believe in the Word really stumble at it when you start to read it for what it truly says. Being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. Peter says, you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who called you out of the darkness into his marvelous light. Which in times were not a people. Well, were we a people? Not until we became a part of God's church, were we? The church formed and set up a new people. But now are the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. How did we do that?
with a repentant heart and with the Ebenezer, our rock of help, Jesus Christ. Here I place my Ebenezer. I will go this far. I will not go any further. I will depend from now on that stone of help. If we say that all of our sin was to be put out of our lives, dealt with, and of course we can never get it all dealt with, but we spent time removing that sin from our lives prior to coming to keep the Passover, then from that point on, for the next 7 days, we have a commission that we are to put unleavened bread into our lives, sincerity and truth. So those two things we should be focusing on the next 7 days. How do we put sincerity and truth into our lives? Every time, Mr. Rigor, every time we eat a piece of unleavened bread, and we are to eat unleavened bread every day for all 7 days, when we do it, it should be reminding us that we are to be putting sincerity into our lives and we are to be putting truth into our lives. That's the reminder, the physical reminder that God gave us. It's not the matter of the thing. It's really only effective if we let it remind us. And you know, I've known people, and probably I've been guilty of this myself at times, in thinking that the bread, is the unleavened bread, is the whole thing. But it's only a symbol of the real thing, which is putting into ourselves sincerity and truth. The definition of the word sincerity, if you look at it in the original Hebrew, Eklania, Eklainia. It means cleanness and purity. That's what it meant in its original. I guess it's Greek, not Hebrew. We are to be developing in our conduct, in our conversation, and in all that we do. Conduct and conversation pretty much encompasses everything that we do, doesn't it? We are to be focused on and to be developing this attitude of cleanness and purity. Now, I thought I'd maybe illustrate this best by painting the contrast. What's the opposite of sincerity? What's the opposite of cleanness and purity? To me, the opposite of sincerity is pride. Pride. And of course, we have the symbolism of pride or yeast puffing up a relatively small amount of batter and turning it into a large piece of bread. All puffed up. And we tend to have that analogy in our heads and in our minds, that pride puffs us up. Sincerity is cleanness and purity. So we should be working to establish cleanness and purity in all that we do for the next 7 days. And it shouldn't end there, but we focus on it for these 7 days. God gave us these 7 days to be focusing on the sincere part, pride versus cleanness and purity. So, okay, that's sort of a platitude, easy to say, but can we get a little more specific?
can we find things that are more specific that would be profitable for us to work on?
I think everybody has to do some of that for themselves. There's a big subject. It's a really big subject. Here's a couple of items at least I thought about, which may spur a little bit for you. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 37, Sermon on the Mount. I think this reflects some purity and some cleanliness. Let your communication be relatively simple. Be yes, yes, no, no. And this is hard, but it does represent cleanness and purity to the extent we can accomplish it. Whatever is more than, you know, speaking the things that we have to say, it just comes from evil. And so if I start using expletives in my conversation, then that's not an indication of purity, is it? In fact, I would say, analyzing myself, if I am using expletives in my conversation, it is to elevate myself usually, or to make the things which I am saying seem like they are more impressive. Pride. Pride. Let your conversation, your communication, just reflect what it really means. Yes, yes, or no, no. Whatever is more than these comes of evil. That's a way. I'm not trying to give you a comprehensive list of everything you can do, but just to spur you to think, you've got 7 days to think about sincerity. How are you going to put sincerity into your life for the next 7 days? I would argue that you're obligated to be doing that for 7 days. Another way. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren, Paul's writing here to the church, the Philippian church, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of a good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. I'd say that is a way to be putting pride out of your life, or to have pride, if you put pride out of your life, to be developing something different during these 7 days of unleavened bread. As I said, not an extensive list. There are lots of ways that we can be establishing clarity and purity in our lives. But that's what we're to be doing for the next 7 days, establishing clarity and purity in our lives. I just, you know, in terms of communication, I'm sort of looking at here, dividing up sincerity and truth, and I'm looking at sincerity. Sincerity is reflecting how we think and how we behave. Truth is a different thing I'll talk about. But how we think and how we act, I think, is the way that ultimately we should think and act is from sincerity. Should be the way that we conduct ourselves. I think that one of the greatest manifestations of pride, here's something to think about. I'm not saying anything about whether or not you need to think about it, but I'm just making some suggestions so that you can maybe
play off of some of these things for the next 7 days and work on whatever you can think, however it stimulates you to think about sincerity. Here's my feeling about maybe the worst manifestation of pride that we have in our present society, and that's gossip. I think it's a big manifestation of pride, and it's a total lack of sincerity. Mostly what I would consider gossip is being said for a person to elevate themselves. That's pride, isn't it? At the expense of somebody else. My personal opinion, it is the biggest problem that we have had in God's church, and I would say we will continue to have. It is not going to go away. So we have to guard against it, and we have to build attitudes of sincerity to replace it. Now, the problem should be, as I said, should have been done away with by the time we put the last of the leaven out of the house. But then we need to work on sincerity. We need to work on doing or elevating other people as opposed to elevating ourselves at their expense. So those are some of the ways that I think of putting sincerity into our lives. Truth. I look at truth as being a different thing. I can't say you could separate them entirely. In fact, they're all mixed up in one piece of bread that you eat, aren't they? It's called unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. We need to, for the next 7 days, work at establishing truth in our lives. Through our rock of help. The rock of help is Jesus Christ. 1 John chapter 14. Thomas asked a question. Thomas said to Christ, because Christ had said, I'm going away where I'm going, you cannot come. Thomas said to Christ, we do not know where you're going, and how can we know the way? Jesus said to Thomas, I am the way. You break this down and make it a little more emphatic. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. No man comes unto the Father but by me. The middle one, you're putting sincerity and truth into your life. Christ says he is the truth. He defines for us what is truth. So where do we go to get truth to put into our lives? That's where we go. Christ has defined truth for us as being himself. I am the truth. There's always, we've established, we've worked diligently for various numbers of years at defining, understanding, and establishing the truth of God in our lives. We're here today keeping this holy day and Sabbath day because we have established truth in our lives. There's always more of God's truth that we can establish. Every day, as we eat a little bit of unleavened bread, let's strive to be thinking about what it is that we can do to establish more of God's truth in our lives, or at least what can we do to better live by that truth that we already know. John 6:35. Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. You're eating some unleavened bread every day, sincerity and truth. Christ said, I am the truth. I am also the bread of life. He that comes to me shall never hunger. He that believes on me shall never thirst. Be sure you spend a little time every day partaking of the written Word of God, receiving some of that written truth into your life. 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. He that comes to me shall never hunger. He that believes me shall never thirst. There are very many aspects about Christ we can examine and learn truth. He is the truth. This is our stone of help. Christ is our Ebenezer, our stone of help. We're supposed to eat unleavened bread for 7 days. When we come next Friday to the last day of unleavened bread, we can sit here, we will sit here, and we will reflect about how well we have done as far as eating the physical unleavened bread, but how well have we done in developing sincerity and truth in our lives. We sit there, we'll probably have some evaluation spiritually about how well we have done that. Will we feel that we have done some of that every day, or will we feel that we have skipped days? You know, some days we didn't really do that, even if we did eat the physical unleavened bread. Only you'll know. Only I will know. I won't know about Hazel. Hazel won't really know about me because it is deeply personal, isn't it? I'll conclude here with a public prayer. It's kind of a public prayer on behalf of all of us. And it is quoted from that hymn. Here we place our Ebenezer. Christ is our stone of help. Here's my heart. That's what we said when we went to the Passover, isn't it? Here's my heart. Oh, take and seal it. Seal it for your courts above. We hope by your good pleasure to safely to arrive at home. It will be an excitement like the Exodus when we come at the end of the next 7 days.